Hello, everyone, and welcome to I'm Actually Comics. It is Wednesday, September 5th. It's actually Tuesday, September 4th, but I'm just saying that because it's when it's going to be out. That's when the comics are out, and there's lots of comics to choose from. I'm absolutely excited about so many books this week.
Yes.
There's a pile of books that I loved, that I really legitimately enjoyed every single one of them. This has been like the best comic week in forever, so... We got a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's get cracking.
Well, since it's a huge week, Marvel, I think Marvel had a huge win this week. I kind of stacked it with some I want to talk about this one first. This is Vertigo's relaunch. I guess it's not really a relaunch, but they're launching a bunch of new books. And the first one that I've seen, maybe there's been others that I've missed, Border Town, number one. From Eric Esquivel and Ramon Villalobos and Tamara von Villan, who is the colorist of Doom Patrol and is really good. I really dug this. It's a border town in Arizona. I got to talk directly into the microphone. And you summarize it. You summarized it much better than I did.
So there is this little town next to the border, and it's a bunch of kids who are a very colorful little crew of children, and some crazy shit starts happening, and you start seeing people are seeing their worst fears come to life in the midst of like little kids leading their normal lives. There's chupacabras, there's spirits, there's all sorts of crazy shit. The art is phenomenal, and it's a great book overall.
Ramon Villalobos is awesome, which is why I initially picked it up. You're kind of like, there's a point of view character of this kid that moves to the town, and he starts high school and meets some people, but then also people are getting slayed and whatnot. Also, Tristan, I think you should make this corn grenade t-shirt for your store, because it's really great.
Unfortunately, that's
it's probably copyrighted.
That is so good. That is really good.
It's a ear of corn, and when it's peeled back, there's a grenade inside it, and it's on the cover. Anyway, that's Border Town number one. It's awesome.
And absolutely awesome.
My pick of the week. My favorite
so
of the week.
Happy. Okay, so I want to pick something like Border Town, but I can't. Because Cosmic Ghost Rider number 3 came out, and so I can't not choose this.
That's pretty great.
Oh, my dear God. Just when you think it can't get any fucking crazier. The last issue, you have the introduction of the Juggerduck.
Juggerduck. It's like, there's just like this whole, because it's crazy and it's in the future, and there's so this like Cable shows up.
Oh.
And he just keeps bringing like more and more, like, you know how when Cable teleports, he's like slide by one or whatever. It's like by the end of this, he's like slide by 100, and Cosmic Ghost Rider is just murdering everybody, and it's insane. But there's like this whole thing with the Thanos baby, because he's protecting a baby who is also Thanos, and then there's a thing at the end with it. It's like cool. It's a great book. It's
there's
super fun.
So many good moments. Super fun. And the last page, I legitimately want a giant tattoo of. It's so fucking good. The Cosmic Ghost Rider. If you're not reading it, you should be. And if you are reading it, then the other thing you should be reading is Thanos Legacy.
Yes, you might have to take point on this one, because I thought it looked cool, but I didn't really understand how Thanos is in a bunch of different time. The time thing I didn't get.
Yeah, so he's exited the whatever weird time realm he was in. There's too many spoilers in this book for Infinity and for other things. I think we can spoil the fact that Thanos gets beheaded, because that was a few issues back.
I think we already have spoiled that on this podcast.
So as far as that goes, we have that happening, and now we have his brother shows up to deal with some other thing that could be a big, you know, cataclysmic event. If it's not dealt with, basically he has a time bomb in his system, and we don't really know what it is, and there's some crazy shit that goes on. It's nuts in the same way that, well, not quite as nuts as Ghost Rider. It's sort of like if you made Guardians of the Galaxy, toned it down to about Guardians level, but it's still phenomenal.
Super cool. I want to briefly mention, before I get to my favorite Marvel book, eventually we'll get there anyway, Deathstroke number 35 is out, and this is, if you've been following this storyline, the Deathstroke versus Batman storyline, which I thought was really strong. I love Christopher Priest, and I feel like we have to mention it. even though I'm sure it's not like a huge seller for DC. It's a great book. And this has been like a 6-part storyline where Batman and Deathstroke have been fighting because someone behind the scenes has set things up so that Batman is under the belief that Damian, his son, is actually Deathstroke's son. And this is kind of like this whole thing played out, but it's very smart. And it also starts with literally Deathstroke and Batman mortally wounded next to each other, just like slap fighting each other by like poking their wounds. It's just like the most like
they're just too like, weak to go yeah, on, so they're just like poking each other just, in the sore spots. It's just so sad and awesome.
It's amazing. It's a really strong finish to a great storyline, and I really dug it.
Cool. I guess I'm gonna quickly talk about this. Moving into Image. This is one that surprised the ever living hell out of me because I did not. I hate to say that I'm not a fan. Because that's not quite fair. I've never really found myself terribly drawn to Scotty Young stuff outside of his Oz books. Yep. I think his Oz books were wonderful.
Yeah.
And this is Bully Wars number one. This is the new thing that he's doing. He has another artist whose name is Aaron Connolly, who I'm unfamiliar with.
He's been around for a while. I've seen the name. I can't remember what books he's done, but he has been around for a little while. I've seen his name before.
So the plot of this is not terribly important. The writing and the story and all that stuff, I'm going to say kind of maybe a B minus for me on this book. But this artist has captured something for me. It feels like somebody, like I would pay crazy money to see him do his version of Day of the Tentacle or like one of those Lucasfilm things. He is just a great... Like he just crams a bunch of cool things into the visual, into the page. His mise en scène, if you will, is really gorgeous. I am enamored of this artist more than I was with the series.
I just Googled him. Can I tell you the book that he drew?
Oh shit! It's gonna be something really gross.
It's actually really surprised me because it's a book that I liked. Sabretooth Swordsman.
Oh,
is that Tiger.
Oh,
Swordsman
I love
book?
That book.
Yeah, yeah, but the art style is way different in this, I think.
Yeah, he's.
I would not have guessed that.
Oh, it's like he's trying to do kind of his own version of Scotty Young in this too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah, Sabretooth Swordsman, co-creator, cartoonist.
Awesome.
So that's who that is.
And that's
great. He's great.
Cool. I really thought you were going to say something terrible.
No. I was just like, whoa. I was actually kind of blown away.
Cool. How about We Bear Bears here?
Okay, yeah. So from Bully Wars to War Bears. This is kind of a strange one. Margaret Atwood of The Handmaid's Tale has conceived of a comic book story, and it is being... fleshed out by veteran comics artist Ken Stesi, who newer comic guys aren't going to recognize him, but like he's been around since forever. I remember my first memories of him were him drawing pages in the Who's Who, DC Who's Who's, but he's just, I'm sure he's done something that I'm forgetting. Anyway, this is, so the cover is like, there's this werewolf lady superhero, but what the comic is actually about is, and if you're, you know, Margaret Atwood is of course like historically accurate and like super crazy detailed, it's in set in World War II Canada, and it's about comic book artists, and so it's basically like a mystery series set in the world of comics creators in the 1940s, and I thought it was actually really good. It was just incredibly well drawn and interesting once I got to where the concept is, and then at the end you see it's he's drawing this new superheroine called Arsenet, and it's a feisty francophone who was bitten by a werebear. I don't know. Anyway, it's a murder mystery or some kind of a mystery. I'm not 100% sure exactly what's going on. It's but really cool book from Dark Horse.
Awesome.
Margaret Atwood and Ken Stesi.
Cool. Okay, this is very exciting for me as well. This is something I've been waiting for quite a while in the world of superhero comics. I've been waiting. They've been teasing this character. He kind of shows up just not as much as you wanted him to. since the beginning. That is the prehistoric Ghost Rider riding a giant fucking mammoth.
Yeah.
That is the character that I've been waiting to see forever, and this is his Avengers number 7 is his origin story.
Yeah.
And it is so cool.
Yeah. It's like the first Ghost Rider, and he's a caveman who rides a woolly mammoth.
And he fights a Wendigo.
Whack. Also, Odin shows up, and they're kind of... There's a prehistoric team of Avengers that I think is going to come into a upcoming storyline.
So good.
So, origin of prehistoric Ghost Rider. I'm going to talk about one that caught me completely off guard, and I actually really loved, although it was super sad. There's a Silver Surfer annual that came out, and it is very much a loving tribute to the Moebius Silver Surfer comics of the 80s and his art in general. It's a basic Silver Surfer storyline where I suppose it's in continuity, but it doesn't really matter. It's Silver Surfer as the Herald of Galactus, and he's trying to find a planet that is uninhabited and having difficulty, and he ends up finding a planet that is inhabited, but he feels like can be sacrificed, and then discovers the truth behind the planet, and I won't spoil the rest of it, but I guess I kind of did by saying it's really sad. So anyway, beautifully drawn, kind of European, obviously Moebius, who I'm pronouncing in the Tristan Moebius.
Thank you. Ever since the Urowski documentary about the making of Dune. And Urowski always very, very clearly enunciates Moebius. I'm like, well, you are like his best friend, so I'm going to guess that you know how to say his name.
Yes. wait, and so this was a comic with Galactus. Was it, which was the comic where the guy, oh, it's that, the Cosmic Ghost Rider where they shrink Galactus with Pym particles and shoot him into space.
Hey, spoiler.
Oh, sorry.
No,
it's fun.
It's so good.
And it's also like two panels of the entire comic. Yeah. But
not even the most important part.
No, it isn't. No, I should watch that. Should we talk about Hulk?
Yeah.
Hulk number 5. It's already on number 5, which is crazy. Is awesome. So this is the Hulk versus Sasquatch, although there's a twist, and is great. Hulk comic is great. I think that Hulk comic can be reviewed without
I can probably.
Hulk comic is great.
Hulk comic smash, smash, smash. No, it's this book is great. You get the Sasquatch fight where you're basically expecting it to go one way because, you know, it's pretty much, it's a sad story of Sasquatch waking up in a hospital and Banner is basically there to deal with him. He has been going around and, like, things are cursed with the gamma. This is basically done like a horror story. So essentially, Gamma is a curse in this version of all of this stuff. Banner brings Hulk to the places where all of these curses exist, and these people are doing bad things because they've been exposed to it and given this ungodly power. And then he just fucking righteously murders them in terrible, terrible ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of like, oh man, Sasquatch, I like him. I don't want to see him get murdered in a terrible way. And it's actually a much more interesting story than just him getting murdered in a new and fascinating
way. It's very interesting, and it harkens back to like the Peter David run of Hulk, and even a little bit before that, as one of the characters that makes an appearance is, I think, predates Peter David, although factored pretty heavy into his run. And the origin of the Hulk, even to some extent, obliquely, I can reference without spoiling. But yeah, it was great. Hulk 5 from Al Ewing and Joe Bennett and others. I'm going to talk about Batman 54, guest artist by Matt Wagner. So awesome.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice that.
The whole thing.
I read that whole thing and didn't even notice it was Matt Wagner.
Yeah. It's
now that I think about the faces, I know it's Matt Wagner.
Yeah. It's actually really great. So, Tom King, post this dumbass wedding storyline, is writing good Batman stories. This is Batman sad because he and Catwoman didn't get married, so Nightwing shows up and tries to cheer him up, and they fight Crazy Quilt and the Condiment King and like all these goofy villains. And the thing with Crazy Quilt is just like a really great sequence. But then there's also kind of a flashback to like how things were when Robin, when Dick Grayson was a kid and Batman first took him in. Really great art. And I guess I've read, you know, DC is all about like teasing you with these like horrible things that are going to happen and people that are going to die and horrible things that are going to happen to characters. And one of the things they're teasing is that Nightwing is going to get fucked up pretty bad. And this is kind of, I guess, like, here's a nice emotional story with Nightwing so that you remember why you like Nightwing. And then next issue, like, he gets blinded or they, you know, rip his arm off or whatever it is. And that's the thing. And then there's also just to dovetail that
they're going to cut his butt cheeks off.
They're going to cut his butt cheeks off and serve them to other DC heroes for breakfast. There's a DC Nation free comic thing, hype magazine, that's like hyping death for this new Tom King crossover. And it's like, it's, if you read the comics, it's obvious you know who's going to die, but they're like, we're not going to spoil it, but then they present like fake odds on who's going to get killed. And it's just like, the storyline is supposed to be this like, you know, reverential treatment of PTSD and how you deal with it. And like the, every single thing that they hype about this series is just like death. Someone's dying. It's like so tone deaf. And I hate DC right now, even though some of their books are actually really good. Their editorial is garbage people and should just never, they should not be allowed to do anything publicly.
Well, speaking of people who aren't allowed anywhere near DC's editorial staff, let's talk about the Sandman series.
Cool, yeah. I flipped through, the art was amazing in that. Dreaming?
Yes. So we spoke to the editor one time and we were like, is there a set of wild dogs outside the door that you just like keep everybody from DC from walking into the Vertigo offices? And he kind of went,
And that those wild dogs are Neil Gaiman's
lawyers.
Yes,
exactly. They're Neil Gaiman's lawyers. Man, I'm so excited about this book.
Yeah.
This speaking of things that harken back, this, it feels like you never left. It really does. Sandman universe. The only reason it doesn't feel exactly like you just left is because they are putting such heavy hitting artists on these.
Mm, great art.
The art is so good. And the stories feel very much like they're part of the old Sandman universe. This feels like old Vertigo, but not like stagnant. It doesn't feel like, it feels like they didn't just throw the last 15 or 20 years away. It's like, this is where it would have progressed naturally. It's so good. If you cared about Vertigo back in the day, get back on. This is the time. It is, things are getting awesome at Vertigo again, and I could not possibly be happier. I want to see people make their money and all that. I want to see people doing the Image thing and getting their rights and all that. But man, these characters deserve a life, and Lucifer and The Dreaming and all these books really deserve to survive, and they are so good.
Yeah, this one is Simon Spurrier is the writer. Bilquis Evely is the artist. Great. Great package. I'm waiting for the Books of Magic because that was the Sandman universe
that I'm excited about too,
that I really liked. So I'll be, but this is all those characters from The Dreaming, Cain, Abel, all those guys, Pumpkin Man,
Merv Pumpkinhead,
others.
Yeah.
So
others, Matthew the Crow, the Raven,
nice,
from Swamp Thing.
Cool.
Yeah, just
nice book.
It's great.
Cover's cool too.
And this is, if you want a basic story, The Dreaming is falling apart. It's starting to crack at the edges because Dream has left for some reason. He's just this new Dream. Daniel is basically kind of like a kind of a will o' the wisp, and he's just kind of like, I don't really feel like being here, and so he just kind of leaves. And him leaving is starting to expose fissures in the walls of The Dreaming and letting things come in. And things want into The Dreaming because it's where their imagination is. It's where ideas are born. It's all these amazing things. And so demons, faceless, these odd faceless marionette people that have broken in. They want in there. Nobody knows where this army of marionette people is from. And so they have to deal with all this stuff without Dream there. And it's awesome.
I always thought of these books as like when I lived in Chicago and I took the bus everywhere, like the kind of books that like you wouldn't be ashamed like to read on a bus.
Yes.
And I think they're continuing along with that tradition.
Yeah.
Very, very well.
Just great stuff.
So we had two new debuts from the Jinx World imprint on the same day, which I think is a little heavy load on one day, but you know. That's...
Well, one of them has been going for 10 years now. So
this one?
United States versus
Murder Inc. Really?
Yeah, I believe that's a retitling of the United States of Murder, unless I'm mistaken.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that one last because it's not as good.
Fair.
The first one that I want to talk about was Cover Number One, which is kind of a slow setup issue with Brian Bendis, David Mack on art. I loved the art style in this book. Really, really cool. And not what I expected from David Mack. You kind of expect, and there is a little bit of that like kind of painterly quality, but there's also a kind of pen and ink style that's like really almost like kind of like indie, like zine kind of like, I don't know. It's it doesn't, it's very unique and cool. Did you check that out?
Oh, God, yeah.
Pretty neat. Anyway, it's a comic
it
book.
It is.
There's a comic book artist and he's successful and someone shows up to his booth at a con and pays him cash for a bunch of original art, thousands of dollars. And he's like, whoa. And then he goes to another convention a few months later and that person is there again. And it turns out that she works for the CIA. And that's as far into the story as I will go.
Yes. It gets very interesting and it really opens up a world that I really want to know more about.
Yeah.
It had a feeling, I mean, obviously not plot wise, but there was a feel to it that reminded me of Why the Last Man in the characterizations where I was like, this is a comfortable story where I'm like, I feel like I know what is going on all the time with all of these characters and I want to know more about them.
Yeah.
In a way that it didn't need vicious plot movement where nothing, you didn't need just like, and then the president showed up and half of him was a shark, you know, like I didn't need that. I just wanted to know what was going to happen next.
Well, and it's also like, you know, in the same way that I wish every movie that came out wasn't like a sequel or a remake yes. or whatever, in the same way that I wish that every comic that came out didn't have Batman in it. You know, it's cool to see a comic that's just a brand new, like, kind of pretty original story, regardless of what medium it's told in. And in this way, I think it's different from the Vertigo books, where a lot of the Image, where a lot of the new debut issues, they try to pack, like, a ton in, which... You know, I mean, I guess it's like it's a balance, but in this one, it's kind of spread out. And I actually kind of like that intro in this book.
I agree. And I think that's what's so cool about the Jinx World imprint is that he's being given the space to tell a story like a storyteller, where a lot of these guys, especially the new guys, especially people who are trying to break in, they've got to grab you. They've got to punch you in the face 15 times. They've got to Mark Millar you. Like, until the point where you're like, wow, I've seen a bunch of people torn apart by dogs, and then there was this other thing, and then a giant snowman crushed a city. Okay, I guess I have to read the next one.
Yeah,
this is just, like, story.
Yeah, and similar to we had number two of Leviathan from Image come out by Jonathan Lehman and Nick Patara, and I love the artists on this. Patara... one of my favorites. There's just too much going on in this book, and it was really hard to read. But still cool, you know, keep an eye on it. Like, they could easily do something cool with it, but it's giant monsters, but they're magic monsters, and they're creating havoc and chaos, and that's about all I can glean from this.
So dinosaurs exist. That's just like in this world, there are just fucking dinosaurs. There's like a land of the lost underneath the city where dinosaurs live.
Were there always dinosaurs?
Yes.
Okay, that's why there's guys with robot suits all of a sudden, even though there was only one dinosaur in the
last there's picture. Dinosaurs all over the place. They haven't ever really done anything, but then these dumb Satanists were bored at a party. And somebody plays with a Ouija board and makes some sort of super dinosaur from Satan and demons and something. Yeah, I'm really pulling together some threads here.
Yeah.
But then it attacks the city, and then you get some like Avatar like douchey military guys killing dinosaurs for seemingly no reason. And I will say I definitely agree that this the plot in this one is tough to follow. It's not solid, but the art is great, and the story is crazy enough that I think that maybe it's going to hold its own throughout the series. Yeah. We're early enough on that I feel like a confusing issue as a number two is going to be tough to keep people interested, but I think that it's definitely something that can recoup by, like, I think that they can regroup and
they can
and
do
bring
something
it
cool with
three.
It. You know, like... I didn't bring it here because of whatever reason, but there was a Kaiju Max issue 2 of the new series that was out, and like there's something where it's like it's giant monsters, but it's like this completely original take on giant monsters, and it's compelling issue to issue, and now that's on like, you know, series 3 or 4 or whatever it is, and it's cool, and I think Leviathan could do that. It just, you know,
yeah. And speaking of which, just so that you know, Kaiju Max, we've talked about a lot. It is one of the best series going if you care about such things, if you're a monster fan, if you're a fan of crazy Japanese monsters and just Orange is the New Black for Godzilla.
Yeah.
If that idea excites you, we have made sure to carry all of the trades. We've got everything in stock all the time because I love it and I want people to read it. Yeah. So. And if you liked Top 10, which was his other thing, I really enjoyed Top 10, which is a police procedural with superheroes.
Yeah, that was a good series.
In the Alan Moore universe, the ABC Comics universe.
But he took it over after Alan Moore was done with
it. He did, and a lot of people hated his take on it. I thought it was fine. Yeah. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
So we kind of skipped over the other Jinx World that I talked about, which is called United States versus Murder, Inc. Number one, which is Bendis and Michael Avon Aiming.
It is a continuation of the series United States of Murder Incorporated from 2014, which was a Marvel comic book that Bendis did. I did not read it, so I'm not the one to... I read this issue, but I didn't read the original series.
Yeah. This one is just like it's a girl and her father is a mobster and he gets killed and then she joins from a young age, is trained by a relative to become part of this mob, and it follows that storyline.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was a thing.
Yeah, it is what it is. If you're the type of person who likes a mob story, it's a mob story, and I think it's going to get cool. But, you know, it's going to get cool like Powers with the mob.
Yeah.
Basically, that's it. If you liked Powers and you like mob stories, I think you're probably going to dig it.
So we're down to the last kind of handful here, and I wanted to, since this isn't like a serious... But it made me incredibly happy for some reason. I've not been really into Harley Quinn. I don't love the series or whatever. But this Harley Quinn number 49 from Sam Humphries and Borges. Allison Borges. This comic, if you are in any way familiar with the Bat manga reprints that kind of came out, or 60s, but it would be a very specific 60s thing. There's a character called Lord Deathman, whose whole shtick is that he can't be killed, although possibly he can be killed, possibly he's a lot of guys pretending to be one guy, whatever the deal is. In the new series, he just can't be killed, and this comic is Harley Quinn killing him over and over and over again, and so, it's kind of funny.
Wait, one question.
Yeah.
Didn't Batman lock him in a safe once and shoot him into space?
Yeah, in the Bat manga?
In some Batman story.
It's possible.
I think it was a Grant Morrison story where he was like, well, I can't kill you, so I'm going to lock you in this safe and you're just going to float around the earth forever.
Well, Morrison was the first guy to use him since his original appearance in the 60s. So I don't have a strong recollection of the resolution of that storyline, but that sounds like it could have been what happened. I didn't read the first issue of this storyline, so perhaps he returned from space and
he definitely
Harley
shot
Quinn just,
Fuzzy Man into space. So
So I mean,
Grant
it's just,
Morrison loves to shoot people into space, maybe.
So, and this is like one of those things where it's just totally random, and I love certain things, but at the very end of this, Harley Quinn breaks DC continuity, and there's the return of a character who. The two fans of the Ambush Bug, if the other one besides me remembers, Johnny DC Continuity Cop is back, and the entire 50th issue, next issue of Harley Quinn, is going to be a jam issue with multiple artists where Harley Quinn is fighting continuity, and I think that kind of could possibly be okay. I just talked way too long about how this stupid comic.
I don't know, man. It sounds great. It. Like the parts that I saw, I really enjoyed.
Yeah,
and again. Harley Quinn is just one of those characters that I could love it. Like, I could see a world where I love the Harley Quinn comics. There's a little too much exploitation. I know that sounds weird to say.
No.
But, like, it's the type of exploitation that for some reason I find distasteful. Like, I can watch Pam Grier movies all day long. And yet, somehow, this type of exploitation feels weird to me. I don't get it. I don't know. I don't understand.
Like I said, I'm not a huge fan. I don't really love the Suicide Squad era take on Harley Quinn, but at the same time, I don't really care one way or the other. I just, this was funny to me because I have a fondness for 60s kook, and this has Lord Deathman, and he just gets killed over and over again.
Yes.
And it's really funny, and it is kind of cool to have a character, you know, it's like the Punisher, where it's like, at a certain point, the Punisher, to me, and I know I am... In the wilderness alone.
You
but,
monster! How dare you?
But like the Punisher is basically just like a mass murderer, you know. And it's like I don't know. It's just it's not as appealing long term to me. I like the Punisher in a miniseries. I don't love the Punisher in a 70 issue ongoing series.
No,
where,
it is.
You
it,
know,
it
and,
is problematic after a while.
Yeah, yeah. It's just murder, you know. And it's like I'm kind of like you know. I mean, I don't. I'm weird, but I'm. I guess in today's modern world, but I'm anti-death penalty. Mm. I don't like murder. It's not a great thing to me. So it's like characters that murder aren't really like, unless it's like completely over the top and like you know, kind of like that. Whatever. So when Harley Quinn is played for that as like, here's a character she can just kill over and over again. It's like, that's cool. You know, she could kill Lord Deathman in every issue of her series.
Because it becomes, and that's the other thing with her, because she almost, they keep hinting to the point where she is a cartoon character.
Hmm.
There's a hint that she's a Gwenpool, that she's basically like a living cartoon character in a world that is realistic, where her abilities are.
I'd be fine with that take.
She can swing a 400-pound sledgehammer like nothing because she's not real. You know, they keep hinting at it, but they never get there, which is too bad because I would be okay with this.
Yeah.
With the Palmiotti world having her as a living cartoon.
Yes. I would be 100% cool with that take.
But still, either way, as toned down Tank Girl, I think she's okay too. I feel like Tank Girl works better because it's so far gone. She's smoking crack. You know, she'll have sex with kangaroos. You're like, okay, this is clearly parody because it's gone so far. It's gone into Guar world where you're like, it can't be offensive anymore because the cartoon is too far gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's kind of more what I would want, and I think they just like it's like DC just wants it to play it like both ways. You
it's,
know, and
it's
like
because it's wishy washy that
your
it's
eggs
like
in one basket or the other, and and if it's in one basket, I'll stay away, and if it's in the other basket, I won't. Let's talk about really quickly. I thought the new take on Astonishing X-Men is out. The newest issue of it, which is Matt Rosenberg and Greg Land, number 15. This is a new team of. So I realized one of the things that I really like about X-Men comics, when I like an X-Men comic, it's typically they take like kind of like a random smattering, like X-Factor was, where it's just like all of these characters that
yes.
can't fit into the regular X-Men book. And so I still think of this as an X-Factor book and not an Astonishing X-Men book, but whatever.
Agreed.
It's Dazzler and Havoc and Colossus and Warpath and Beast, and they're fighting the Reavers, and I like it. I think it's a fun X-Men book that doesn't suck. There's like a it's its own thing. It doesn't have to worry about a Banshee is in it as well, and he's a zombie of some kind.
Yes,
but whatever.
So, Vampironica from Archie Horror is
loved
out.
It. We probably should have talked about this sooner.
We probably should have. Vampironica has been really fun.
Greg Smallwood
And Meg Smallwood, I believe twins,
sure,
something like that. I can't remember, but I know that their parents came into the store, and they were talking about them, and so that's. So that's I kind cool. of remember them being like, oh, the kids, something like that. So
nice.
I thought that was pretty cool.
If every Archie comic had art this good, I would buy more Archie comics.
Yeah.
For sure.
Really fun.
This is the best in that like horror universe thing that they have done, hands down, to me. Like,
I would probably trade weight this one for me. But
sure.
But I am enjoying the issues. Honestly, the reason I would trade weight is just that the comic, if you're like a comic collector and you love to have your pristine comics, Archie can't make a comic that doesn't look like it's been run over by a truck.
Yeah.
Like wherever their production facility is, I'm guessing it's under a dock somewhere because it's like all their books look like shit when they come fresh. Like this is the best looking one that we've seen. And it really does look like it was run over by a car.
Yeah, that's funny. You know what I think
all of our Archie books have come in like that in the last 2 months. Actually, that's way too generous. In the last year, they've been like this.
The cool thing about, and so Greg Smallwood is awesome. He did a Moon Knight series. You might remember him from that. And Meg Smallwood. The characters are recognizable as Archie characters. It's like this is someone who appreciates like the kind of artistic history of what Archie comics were about, which most of these horror books completely disregard, and I hate. This, you know, Archie has the waffle hair.
Yeah, I liked that.
You know, all this stuff. Dilbert is like a huge part of this in a very smart and interesting way.
Yeah.
Like all of the characters feel like, I mean, they feel like more developed, I guess, than like the goofball Archie stuff, but at the same time, it's great. And so, basically, in this one, Veronica is bitten by a vampire, and also in general, vampires have overrun Riverdale, and so she is now teaming up with the various characters to try to prevent badness from occurring.
And just for the benefit of anybody out there, and I'm not looking in the direction of Bob when I say this, but I will say that I went to Spirit Halloween, and they do have a Riverdale jacket. They very much have an Archie jacket there.
Nice. Have you seen, have you been, okay.
Looks pretty good.
So you know about this. You know that Riverdale is enormous. Like,
yes.
It's huge.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you go into, like, I go to the mall, like, I work right by there, and I'll just go on my break if it's raining or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
the teen, it is.
Hot Topic is, like, a section that is all Riverdale.
Awesome.
Like,
that's crazy.
Literally, like, when you walk into Hot Topic, the
entire wall. I can't believe it worked.
Is Riverdale. Yeah, it's huge.
I wonder if that means that they can pay John back the money they own.
Jesus. They should. Whatever. That's a digression.
I know, and it's probably illegal for us to talk about
this. We don't want to get sued.
Let's not get sued.
The widow of Archie.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't either. Who are we talking about? We're talking about
a different Archie.
Charmin Ultra presents As Guardians of the Galaxy,
yes.
An Infinity Wars tie-in.
Guys, Frog fucking Thor.
Whose name is Throg.
I do love Throg. I'm sorry.
Throg.
Throg, the Frog of Thunder. But that's important because Frog Thor is Thor as a frog.
Yes.
And Throg is that frog from a later story who touches the chip from...
Oh.
His family's being attacked by the rats. And then he finds the thing from the fight that he has with the Wrecking Crew, I think.
Oh.
And so he just happens to touch this rock and it's part of Mjolnir. And that chip becomes a little tiny Mjolnir for him. And because he was so brave, he was the bravest little frog.
Was he one of the frogs that helped Thor when Thor was a frog? Is that
I believe so, yes.
So this Asgardians of the Galaxy is a team of Asgardians characters. And it is, what's her name again?
Angela.
And then Valkyrie and the Destroyer and the Executioner and Throg and... For some reason, the horrifically coiffed Thunderstrike is back.
Oh, my God.
Man, does he have a terrible haircut in this.
But it's...
holy moly.
It's like, nowhere near as bad as his old one. I don't know, man.
I don't know. I'd take mullet over this haircut any day
yikes.
Of the week.
It's pretty bad. Either way, but to be fair, he is the butt of the entire... Of every joke.
Is he the original Thunderstrike, or is he just a new guy that's
Is that Eric Masterson?
Is it Eric Masterson? I couldn't tell, and it was hard to tell.
I think he says that he's Eric Masterson and not Thunderstrike.
He definitely says he's Thunderstrike. And he definitely has the Thunderstrike mace.
Yeah, and they mention him as, like, he's basically the butt of the joke at the end where they're like, and you have Thunderstrike.
Yes, and also the Destroyer is animated by a character who is revealed at the end, and it's like, ooh.
Which is actually kind of cool. I'm pretty excited
about
that.
Also, the new issue of Captain America, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Lionel Francis Yu, number 3, is out, continuing the storyline of the pile of... guys named Nuke,
yes.
As opposed to the pile of nukes, and it's Black Panther's in this one, and it's continuing that storyline. Yeah. And then last but not least, the most divisive comic of the week for me and Tristan was Justice League number 7. He hated it.
I hated it.
Did not hate it. There were a lot of things in this specific issue that I thought were awesome. I think it does lack a little bit of cohesion.
Hold on. Let me backtrack. I hated it.
Yeah.
I felt like it was very confusing. I disliked a lot of the ways that the storytelling took place. That's about it. To say that I hated it would be way too far gone. Yeah. There were 3 moments in the book that I thought by themselves were awesome. Like straight up super awesome moments.
The jaws of your utter humiliation.
There's a good Aquaman moment. Yeah, there's a good Green Lantern moment. There's a good reveal of a new character moment, which
returning character.
Right. But I will also say that that is one of my big pet peeves with DC is that they do rely on that a lot for their end splashes. I mean, Marvel does too, but it feels like a lot of times you'll just have the last page be character you haven't seen for a while because DC has so many characters. So they can just be like, look at this guy from the 30s that you haven't seen for a really long time.
Or the
80s. That's an end.
Remember the
80s. Exactly.
Let's go, boy. I will say the biggest thing that I don't like about this is that Scott Snyder has no handle on like the voices of these characters. Like Lex Luthor is talking like a opera villain, and when the character at the end shows up, he's supposed to be basically just like this average like Yahoo from the street, and or at least in his origin he was, and then now he's like behold, and it's just like they all talk like he does not have a good grasp of dialogue in a way like Tom King does, or that like Brian Bendis does, or that, you know, like someone like Garth Ennis does. You know, it's like, and I mean that's a heavy comparison,
right.
But like, you know, having everybody talk like they are literally like a dastardly from the like, you know, or whatever, you know, just like goofball dialogue. It's not the best, but
worked so well in Metal for like, for me, Metal was written for me, and I feel like he needs to get back to Batman.
Yeah.
Like he needs to get back to where he was because he's writing Justice League as though he's writing Metal still, where it's just like everything is extreme in big like 90s air quotes. Everything is like amped up to the nth degree. And sometimes you can back it down and have moments. And the things that were the best in this book were the times when he took a few seconds to give them moments. Like interpersonal reactions between characters that were not, you know, earth-shattering. all of that was the best thing in the book, and I found everything else boring.
Yeah.
except for a couple of the real like denouement moments where somebody
was a great moment with Jon Stewart and John Jones, whatever, Marshmallow Hunter. If you know those characters' history, like you can imagine, like, you know, there's gravitas there, emotional, and that was cool. I was gonna say, so another reason why DC editorial needs to never say anything publicly. They put out all this press about how Snyder is like, this is like, if I'm never gonna tell another superhero story, I want it to be this story. If this is my last swan song or whatever, and it's like, you're really trying to convince me that like your ultimate comic book storyline of all time is to like make the entire planet Earth a White Lantern? Like, I don't believe it. Like, I'm sorry. Like, just stop doing press. Stop putting out stuff. Just be like, here's this crazy thing. And if it's off the rails, like, say it's off the rails, but that's your job as an editor, not like, your job as an editor is not to do press. It's to make sure your books are readable.
And okay, and here's where I'm going to defend my not liking some of these things. Mm-hmm. Since we've already spoiled the fact that the Earth has turned into a White Lantern.
And it's like two panels at the beginning of the comic.
And it's also last comic in the
world.
Yeah, exactly. So the Earth is not a character. this is something important to understand, is that when he tried to make a big important moment, if it had been Mogo, it would have been a moment because you personified him in some way.
Yeah.
If Swamp Thing had taken over the planet and he was sentient and he had some sentience over the entire Earth, you know the character of Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
And if he's trying to hold things together, you're like, this consciousness of this character that I deeply care about because I've had, you know, 50 years of continuity behind it.
Yeah.
And you can just say the Earth is now Swamp Thing.
Yes.
You go, oh, fuck. Swamp Thing's going to get hurt. That upsets me.
In fact, they did that as a storyline in Swamp Thing, and it was awesome.
Yes. And so a White Lantern, you're like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
And also my other problem is that as far as the villain work goes, I could not tell you what the motivation of the bad guys is.
There is. It is very difficult.
The bad guys
ascertain.
Are being bad. They're like, you know, this planet that we live on, we're gonna blow it up, and we're gonna live in space on rocks because we're bad.
Yeah, like, what is your point? Like, you're Lex Luthor. Your whole deal is that you've worked your entire life to make $1 billion as a guy. Like, why the fuck do you want to like crack the Earth in half? It makes no sense. Like,
we're gonna set our faces on. It's like, why are you? What are you doing?
And I also will say that there is a character like thing at the end that is one of. It's another example of DC being tone deaf, where like you're expected to care about character X just because DC says you should.
Yes.
And it's like, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. This character is dumb, and like there's a character that comes back and I'm like, that's cool. And then the next one is like a bad guy character and you're just like, who gives a serious, like,
there's nothing
at all. Don't care.
I feel like there isn't a lot of earned emotional gravitas for any character in this story. It's relying on continuity to say, no, you remember all that stuff that happened that I didn't write into this story.
Yeah.
Now that's why you care about these characters.
Yeah, and it's like confusing continuity. So like you said, the character moments, like the Hawk Girl moment is cool. The Jon Stewart moments are cool. Like the Aquaman moment is cool. There's like parts where they're like just talking to each other and it's cool. But it's like all the other stuff, the actual like meat of the story is just kind of confusing.
It
could be cool,
but it's
your
a big
ideas
clusterfuck
that you just shot off the top of your head are more compelling to me than what's actually in the comic. So as much as I did like it, it also has, I think, pretty good art, although I think that this artist could be doing better stuff if the script was better. I
hate this comic. No, I like
I
Scott Snyder a lot. I like he is capable of a lot of great things. I think that this is maybe my least favorite thing that I've read from Scott Snyder. Mm. And I do like the Justice League. I do like Justice League books. I mean, I've probably read the Grant Morrison run like 5 times.
Yeah, this is not the Grant Morrison run, although there are.
But maybe that's why it's so frustrating, is because it feels like the Grant Morrison run. it's just not as good. It's like it like.
Well, also the Grant Morrison did the Grant Morrison run. Like,
right.
You know, I feel like that this, like, when I was really excited about it, it was more like Justice League Unlimited, like the cartoon.
Right.
And I like that idea of that kind of a take on the Justice League, which is something that, like, Dwayne McDuffie, I feel like, was kind of, like, building towards or, like, could have done if he was not editorially interfered with and then kicked off the book. But, like, you know, a Justice League book could be really cool. You're handicapped by a lot of these, like, huge characters and them being in, like, 800 comics. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I don't know. There's a lot to like, but there's also a lot to improve, I think, is a good takeaway.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we talked about Justice League longer than we talked about anything else, and there was, like, 8 million awesome books.
Okay, so... but I also, just before we go, I want to make sure that I mention the signing that's happening on Friday.
Oh, those books look so good.
They're great. So, Christian Dabari and Clay McCormick are both going to be here from, Poser and Waxworks, respectively. I think I got it backwards. Either way.
No, Christian Dabari is from Waxworks.
Waxworks and Clay is from Poser. Yeah, I literally just forgot which order I put them in. And so as a special guest, we also have Corinne Howell from. She's done everything. She did Ghostbusters: Answer the Call. She's done a bunch of Transformers stuff. She worked on Zodiac's. What is that called?
Zodiac.
The last one was called Starfall.
There was a Zodiac Star Force. Is that something?
Yes, that
that's
thing.
A name. I
it was
recognize.
A thing that you liked. She worked on that book.
Zodiac.
Oh my god, I'm totally forgetting it.
Fuck.
It was an all ages book. It looked awesome.
Okay. Was well, very... if I liked it, I mean, I read so many damn comics for this thing now. I apologize in any way. I'm really excited about this signing.
Gonna be great. But. Check out Corinne's stuff. She's an artist that I respect incredibly. Like, she is so friggin' young to be as talented as she is. I hate to, you know, it feels like you're jinxing somebody when you say this, but I've never seen anybody at this level for her sequential storytelling, for her, like, single splash page art or any of this stuff. She's going to be huge.
Cool.
And that is to say that she's already working on, like, two books at a time. She is fast. She produces volume.
Nice.
Like, she is great at that. And she can, like, when she draws Transformers, she is like a machine. She can, like, the architecture. It's Transformers books are the kind of thing that, like, cartoonists can't do. You know, like, a lot of people have a hard time because they have to be so perfect.
On model.
Exactly.
Yeah,
they all have
to
be.
All the models are different.
And everybody's, there's so much to remember. And the stuff that I've seen from her that she did for Transformers just blows my mind because on top of just having perfect geometric.
Well, yeah, cars
form.
Are, like, notoriously, like, difficult to draw in
and
general.
And then she has, like, really, like, stray bullets level of facial expressions.
Oh, cool.
Where you're like, holy, just, nice. it's an amazing combination. Really, really respect her. You should definitely come meet her.
So this is Friday?
This is Friday, September 7th, and it's going to be at 6 o'clock.
That's awesome. I gotta say, like, I feel like I'm kind of coming across as, like, I'm hyping this thing, like, because I do this podcast. Like, I am genuinely, as a fan, like, I think these books are really, really cool. And I think it's really cool, this event. I'm really excited for it. I'm really excited to go plunk down some money on these cool comics and records and then this other new artist that, you know, the whole thing. It's cool. It's cool that you have that the ability to put that kind of a thing on, and I want people to come out for this. Like,
yeah,
I think
me
it's
too.
Really, but, like, I mean, I, as a, with no financial stake in this, like, I think that, like, it would be really cool to, something that's really cool to support.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. These guys are all up and coming people. And I think it's like, guys, before something happens where you are going to have a much harder time meeting these people, and these people are all at that point in their career where it's like, you don't have to get in line for them yet. And there will be a point when you do. Yeah. They are awesome, and they're doing the new exciting stuff. Be there at the beginning, you know, like be one of those people that supports somebody who's right there.
Also,
before they become
crazy. The comics they're making, these horror books are like, they're really cool. Mm. They're really cool books, and it's like I don't know how to impress upon someone without being able to like show you, like, check this out, you know, what's cool about it. But at the same time, it's, you know, I'm not a horror guy, you know, like I'm and these books are really, really cool looking. And also, are we nearing the end? Do we need to? I just wanted to say really quickly, because we talk about stuff at the beginning and then we kind of ramble. If you've been listening the whole time, and just in case you've forgotten, my pick of the week was Border Town from Vertigo, and yours was Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Mine was Cosmic Ghost Rider. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry,
it's
everybody.
Great book. It's a great book.
I want to support somebody else, but God damn it, Cosmic Ghost Rider is so good.
But when it's appropriate, you do, and obviously you do.
New Frankencastle, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tristan. I don't think you're doing enough to support indie creators.
I'm sorry.
Like, let's now talk about your signing with indie creators that's happening in 3 days.
Oh, good point.
You know,
awesome.
And the store that you run. Anyway.
Well, good. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. So we got it. That was a lot of comics, but so much. You got to come out this week for books.
Yes.
It is.
There's that Twisted Romance trade is out. That's one to check out.
Yeah. Twisted Romance.
That was a cool book.
Alex DeCampi.
That I liked single issues of. So cool to see. And there was, what else do I remember from trades? Hellboy Omnibus.
Yep.
Soft cover, some Batman stuff. I don't know.
Some weird Black Panther thing from the 90s, I think, came out. Original graphic novel.
Yeah, there's undoubtedly, like, there was a bunch of action figures and whatnot.
Ooh, there were. Actually, the new DC action figures look great. There was a Brainiac 5.
Cool. Yeah, I did see the Brainiac. That was cool. And that was also, what were the, maybe those aren't new, but I just noticed them. You've got them all displayed now. All the like horror movie action deluxe action figure boxes.
Yeah,
like,
we started getting a. We have an account with NECA now, so we do direct through NECA, so we can get decent pricing on everything.
Nice.
So we have all of the like the ultimate Jason, like 1 through 6, and like the ultimate Chucky, and the ultimate, you know,
and there was
Pennywise, and
there was like It figures.
But I mean, more importantly, the Devil's Backbone figure is mind-blowingly good. It's from the Guillermo del Toro's, has his own line through NECA.
Nice.
So it's like,
you put that on the gram, right?
Yes, I did. I absolutely did. Gram. It's like, it's so good. If you love that movie, and if you've seen it, you probably do. It's so perfect.
It comes with
like the creepy dead plants and the gigantic bomb, and like it's a great little diorama of spookiness.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a cool looking figure.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys.
Right. Yes.
Have a lovely evening.